This recording is entitled Homeschooling a Houseful by Speaker Melanie Young. This message was recorded at the 29th Annual Virginia Homeschool Convention in Richmond, Virginia, held June 7th through June 9th, 2012. This recording is copyrighted material and cannot be duplicated or distributed in any physical or electronic format. For more information on this conference, please visit www.heav.org.
You are the few, the brave, the ones who ate lunch late, right? I don't know why they schedule a session this late. It's tough. You know, I feel like I ought to have snacks to pass out to help y'all make it. We do have a house full. I was telling someone that our children range 19 years. So our children are now 22 down to 3. Now picture this. I am sitting in my recliner with my feet up. Sounds relaxing, doesn't it? Well, I was nursing the baby. That's cool, it's cuddly. But Susanna was sitting on my foot support playing with the baby. And I was doing phonics with David and helping Seth find his place in his grammar book and answering an algebra question for Sam when I heard two of the other children fighting in the kitchen. You know, suddenly I felt claustrophobic, like all my hair was going to stand on the end. You ever feel that way where the hairs on the back of your hand start standing up, you know? You think you're going to lose it? You know, that's what happened when I was trying to write this session. And it was a couple years ago, a few years ago, but I did live through it, and so will you. You know, I feel like homeschooling a house full of children is kind of like the plate spinning act. Have you ever seen a plate spinning act? You know, where the guy's got all these canes, and he starts them twirling, and he starts a plate on it, and he starts another one, and another one, and another one, you know? This is a homeschooling mother with several children, watching the plates fall to the ground and break, right? Why in the world would anybody want to do that? Why do we want to live a crazy life where you can't even go to the bathroom by yourself and you never succeed at anything, it feels like, and your house hasn't been clean? Well, let's just say since the last time someone came over, right? Because that's the only time you clean house. Anyway, the reason why that you want to do this is it is amazing to see, because complete strangers will come up and they'll ask you, "Don't you know what causes this?" And you get a chance to tell them, yes, we're thankful that God gave us these children. And it gives you an opportunity to tell them about your Savior. You know, this completely changed my view of it. Many years ago, we read an essay by a father of many children. And he said he went out for the first time with their new baby, and they had, you know, a whole duck row following him, children, right? And people were staring at him. And he was like, oh, he's feeling kind of awkward, you know, what are they going to say, you know, oh, we're really weird. And suddenly he realized they were all smiling, that he was a celebrity. There's a celebrity just because of his children, and that his children were bringing him into the public eye and giving him an opportunity to stand up for Christ. It also glorifies God. You know, when those times when you just can't manage, when you come to the end of your rope, folks, that's where we see God's grace. If I could, I told a mom who told me in tears just a little while ago, a few minutes ago, she said, "I feel like a failure." And I said, "You know what? If you were succeeding at it, God wouldn't be getting the glory, would you? Would he?" It's when our strength comes short, that God can step into the gap and meet our needs and glorify himself. You know, and finally, everybody ought to want to do this because it's just a great lot of fun. We have so many happy memories. Somebody right before him was saying, isn't it weird to have a 19-year gap? Do they have a relationship difficulties? No. They have an awesome relationship. When our now 22-year-old first went off to college 4 years ago, his little sister, who was 3-4 at the time, would say, "John, can I go to college with you?" And he'd say, honey, you're too young to go to college. And she'd say, I'm getting bigger every day. And you know, when we dropped him off at college, they both cried. You know, because they have an awesome relationship together. This is the day we dropped him off at college. And you know, all his brothers are gathering around his room in his dorm, and we're all laughing and carrying on. And you know, it's just awesome. It's great fun. But it is a plate-spinning act. And lots of times it feels like you're just running from plate to plate, putting out fires, trying to keep it all spinning, and the plates are crashing, and it's hard. And so let's talk about how to keep those plates spinning and keep them all in the air, okay? Okay, first of all, balancing the school plate, because that's hard, isn't it? You know, first of all, you can balance plates by, have you ever seen them spin two plates at once? Okay, you can do that. Don't duplicate your effort. Some of your subjects will need to be individualized. Math, a lot of language arts is going to need to be on that child's level. But you should be combining everyone under high school together in science, combining everybody under high school together in history, and any extra subject as much as you can, because you're a busy mom and you don't have time for that to duplicate effort. You don't have time for teacher intensive curricula. You know, you don't have time to read something aloud different for each child. You know, you're going to have to make it efficient, all right? Now, one of the advantages of combining subjects among a large family is it builds unity. You know, our children still talk about the Roman feast we had, 15 years ago. You know, when they study the same things, then when topics of conversation, we all have something to talk about at the table. We go to a museum, everybody has something they're interested in. You know, it builds a relationship across the ages of your children when you do things together. But don't combine too many plates. It is possible to combine too much. A lot of people ask me, well, should we do, if we have two children that are close in age, should I put them in the same grade? No. First of all, because they're both going to feel like complete failures. Because they have different talents. And one's going to be good at math, and one's going to be good at reading. And so the one that's good at math is going to feel like a failure because he's not as good as his brother at reading. And the one who's good at reading is going to feel like a failure because he's not as good as his brother on math. It's kind of crazy. That's the way it is. But most importantly, it's senior year. Senior year is incredibly stressful, because you're trying to help them shape where they're going after they leave that bow you've pulled back and you've pulled back and you've pulled back. Now it's pulled back as far as you can. You got to let go and fire them off into the world. And it's hard to know where to point that thing. It's hard to know where they're supposed to head. And you really do not want to live through this with two children at once. I know people who have, and they nearly had to be institutionalized. Okay? So you don't want to have to live through that with twice. Now, so what can you do to balance the school plates? First of all, make a plan. I resist planning. I'm a spontaneous person, and it kind of changed my mind when I heard someone mention a schedule is really a budget for your time. Whoa, now you're talking something I understand. I'm a financial person. I like budgets. I like to know how that my money is being spent where I want it to be spent. My time is being spent where I want it to be spent. Got it, okay? Now, I can't budget all day, and you have small children, you can't do it, okay? You're going to go crazy, because small children are randomizers, okay? And so what we do is we do a partial schedule, like schedule the morning, so you know what subjects you're going to do one after the other. Don't try to schedule the poor baby, okay? Schedule how you're going to handle the morning so you can get through it, and then do whatever you need to in the afternoons and evenings. You don't want to be a slave to your schedule. Now, lists are very important, especially for boys. Boys really like to have something to conquer. They like to have something they want to know what they have to do, and they have to succeed. And a boy, if you don't tell him everything he's got to do in a day, he will take all day to do math. Because why should I finish math? You're just going to give me something else to do. That makes no sense. But if you say, here's your list. When you accomplish this, your time is your own till supper. Whoa. He's getting up at 6 a.m. He's finishing his school by 9 a.m. His brothers hate him. But he finishes, and he's like lying there reading with his feet in the air. And his brother's like, you're supposed to be doing school. I'm done with my school. You know, you got to do things the way they understand. And so try partial schedules that will fit in. And I tell you, I don't schedule the baby at all. And this is why. And we don't have any babies anymore. I'm 48. Our last one was born at 45. I don't know if the Lord will give us any more. But see, the weakest member of the household should not be held to the strictest schedule. When I'm thirsty, I go get something to drink. I don't look to see if it's time for me to have a drink. Okay? And you don't hold your youngest, weakest member to the strictest schedule. I don't believe in that. And instead, we just meet the baby's needs as we go through our day. So if I'm teaching history and the baby needs to nurse, I nurse the baby while I'm teaching history. Okay? You're discreet, but it does your sons a lot of good to see you nurture a baby and understand that there's more to a woman's body than looking at bad pictures. You know? And so what you want to do is you want to get the easiest plate spinning first. All right? Now, first of all, that means that what you want to do is when your toddler comes up and says, "Mommy, Mommy, Mommy," do not put them off. Because the one thing that toddlers have in a completely long-term memory attention span for is whining. They can whine all day. And so if you say, "Just a minute, honey, let me finish this math lesson. Just a minute, honey, let me finish this math lesson." They will whine all the way through the math lesson. Instead, you turn to the math lesson guy and you say, "Work this example. Honey, I'm so glad to see you." Pull them up in your lap. Look at them face to face, eyeball to eyeball. And then say, "Okay, let's do some toddler school. Let's count your toes. Let's sing the ABC song. Let me teach you a Bible verse." Because if you make that time profitable, they'll be gone like that. You know, I'm serious. And you will have accomplished something in their lives. You will have shown them your love and delight in them. Okay? Now, your independent learners, keep moving. Your older children, give them a schedule and say, "Okay, a schedule that says things like, see me before you do chemistry. Or come talk to me after you've read this." And send them on their way. And make sure that you choose easy curricula for hard subjects. Okay, if you're struggling in a subject, this is not the one to choose the cheap and hard to use curriculum. Because if you don't like it and you hate the subject, you're not going to use it. Have you figured that out? Yeah, the used book sales are full of those. So instead, what you do is if you struggle with a subject, say you're really bad at math and you're terrified of it and you're really struggling, first of all, you're going to get better. Okay, because after you've heard third grade math three or four times, you got it down. Okay? But at first, you get the curriculum that says, first, you say this, and it shows you exactly what to say. And then it says, the children will respond like this, in which case you say that, or like this, in which case you say the other. Okay? You need something scripted and easy to use and beautiful in the subject you hate. Okay? So remember that. That'll make school a lot easier. And sometimes you're balancing the school plates and everything just spins out of control. This is a picture of our youngest, Katie Bug. She was 2 weeks old, and I noticed that she was breathing fast when she nursed. And I took her to the doctor thinking she might have been exposed to RSV. And what happened is her heart rate was 276. And they had to stop her heart. They called Life Flight. They had to stop her heart 6 times to get it in the right rhythm. We spent weeks in and out of ICU. Boy, school was. Okay, there are rough days and nights that don't rise to that level. There are days that the baby was up fussy all night or a child was throwing up during the night. And you're going to have days like that. That's when planning pays off. You know, when I was in the hospital with Katie, the older boys could just continue on. They knew what to do. The younger ones, my mother was able to and their grandmother's able to take over and help out with them. If you've got things planned out a little bit, it's easier to deal with crises. And, you know, sometimes you need to get a substitute teacher. Now, you know, we're not TV kind of folks. We don't have cable. We don't watch TV. Sometimes we watch videos or download videos from the internet. It's times like these that having some great educational videos can really pay off. Get yourself a set of the Moody Science videos, just like 20 of them. okay? And then when you have a day where everybody's throwing up, and yet you type A personalities are like, we really ought to be doing math. Never mind, they can't keep their head out of the toilet. You know, and give everybody a wastebasket lined with a trash can that smells like vinegar. Trash bag that smells like vinegar. I mean, smells like vanilla. Really helps, okay? Dissipate the smell. And then you lay them out on the couches. Put down some plastic tablecloths. And watch Moody Science videos, and they're doing science, and you count it as a school day. And don't feel guilty. You don't want to do that every day. But when you need to, you do it, okay? You know, distractions from babies and toddlers can be really hard to cope with for some children. Distractible children really raise the frustration level, especially because they tend to be some of the most distracting children in the house. You know, so like I've got the child who will sit there tapping his foot. When we have a family meeting, we have to make sure there's nothing around his feet, and he's a teenager, because he's kicking everything near him constantly. Trust me, insane. Okay, so he's making all kinds of noise, and he says, Mama, can't you make them be quiet? They're driving me crazy. Son, you're the one making all the noise in here. But those distractible children may need to do their work during nap. They may need to get up early. He's the one that got up early and got his schoolwork done, because he figured out, you know, if I get up early, I can finish my schoolwork in 2 hours. If I try to do it with the distractions of the family going on around me, it takes me 8. And so that child may need headphones to listen to music to drown out the chaos of having a big family. Now, I require them to listen to instrumental music, because I don't see how in the world you can be writing and somebody singing in your ear, right? Which they resent a little bit, but still. So they listen to movie scores. And so I insist they wear headphones, because, you know, my life is dramatic enough without a building crescendo of suspenseful music in the background. Forget that. I'm not going there. No, thank you. I love quiet. But, you know, ultimately, learning to work through distractions is a life skill. Very few adults have a distraction-free life, do we? You know, we're interrupted constantly. And so don't worry about your children being distracted and all the chaos that goes on in your home, because it's teaching them to cope with life. Harold, if you have a phone, my phone's low battery, I'd appreciate it. Now, so what does it look like? Well, it looks more like Little House on the Prairie than the school you grew up in. Okay, I had a lady in my support group that showed up one time, and she looked awful. Her hair hadn't been brushed, her shirt was dirty, you know, she looked awful, and she said, she's a new homeschool mom. Thanks, baby. And this one up here. Okay. Man, these complicated phones. Hell, I can't figure out how to open or operate this thing. Come help me. Okay. Upper left corner gives me like a camera. You got to come help. Okay. I'm obviously not the iPhone person. All right. And I said, well, tell me, what does your day look like? And she said, oh, well, I bought these little school desks and I put them there. And I got a blackboard installed in my den. She was a teacher. She said, first I teach the first math lesson, then I teach the second math lesson, then I teach the third math lesson, then I teach the fourth math lesson, and then I give them their seat work, and it takes all day long. I said, well, let me tell you how we do it. We get up in the morning, everybody has pre-breakfast chores, okay? And they get the chores done, we have breakfast, then we sit down, we do devotions. And so we're all gathered together, because Hal tells me, if you don't have time for devotions, you don't have time for school. And he's right, because things go wrong if we don't have devotions. So, and then the big ones go to work on their stuff, and it's like the one-room schoolhouse that you see in Little House on the Prairie. Remember, Laura would call somebody to her, work with them while everybody else is working, send them away, call somebody else. It's tutoring, and it's way more effective than lecturing. In fact, one of our sons went to Oxford University, and he wrote back, he said, Mom, this is like homeschooling high school. I said, how? He said, they don't have classes here. They have, each semester, they assign you a major subject and a minor subject, and you get a professor in each one. And you meet once a week with the major one and every 2 weeks with the minor one. And you go to the professor, and he talks to you about the subject and assigns you a reading list and assigns you a paper to write. And you go spend your whole week in the library reading and studying and writing your paper, and then you come back the next week and you defend your paper to him, you read it to him, and you argue with him, and you debate it with him. And then he gives you more reading assignments to increase your understanding. That's because that's the most effective way to teach, and so the most elite college in the world, that's the way they teach. That's the way you teach. So, and in some ways, it's a juggling act. You know, you're going to try to meet this child's need, that child's needs, take a break, you know. And sometimes you've got to have an intermission, right? You got to have a break. Okay, intermission, and this will subtitle this, Staying Sane. I used to feel really guilty if I didn't have lunch with my children. Because, you know, you read all these things in the mothering magazines, and they say, you need quality time with your children. Folks, this was made up by working women so they didn't feel guilty. Okay, because you know what? I just spent 5 hours with my children. I think they've had some quality time. You know, and really what children need is not quality time. What they need is quantity time. Because you can't schedule a teachable moment. You can't schedule a time your child wants to talk about spiritual things. You can't schedule an opportunity to talk to them about sexuality. It happens. And you've got to be there to deal with it. And so I invented what I call the non-working lunch. When it comes time for lunch, we have a lunch chef. And the lunch chef makes lunch. And the kitchen assistant rotates the dishwasher, because our dishwasher always needs rotating. Always. We rotate it 3 times a day. And they produce lunch while the others are doing their chores. And then the children eat lunch together in the kitchen. And I check email. I noodle around on Facebook. I read a book. I relax. I get recharged so I'm a better mom in the afternoon. Now, some of you are thinking, what about the mess? Don't they make a mess in the kitchen? Well, sure. If they make a mess in the kitchen, then they get the right to clean up the mess in the kitchen after lunch. They have after-lunch chores, too. But the real lifeline in staying sane is your devotions. If you are not spending time in the Word of God and prayer every day, then you are laying down your armor and you're making a joint for Satan to attack you through. Because, see, I know it's hard to manage quiet time. I remember when our 4th was a baby and just feeling grieving over this, because I could never remember at a time I could do it. You know, it was crazy. The lifetime was crazy. We had 4 children, 7, 8, and under. And so I said, okay, Lord, look, I really want to spend time with you. I can't remember. If you will remind me at a time I can do it, I won't say no to you. Did you know I have almost never forgotten since? And that son is 15 now. Because the Lord wants to spend time with you. Now, for me, it meant putting my Bible in my bathroom. First thing in the morning, that I get quiet because nobody wants to get up in the morning. You know, and I have some time to spend with the Lord there. The Lord doesn't care if you meet him in the bathroom. He understands your life. He gave you these children. He knows where you are, and he's not expecting you to do deep Bible studies. He's expecting you to seek his face. And so just make sure you spend some time in the Word. You read a little bit. You spend some time, you go to him in prayer, and that'll be your real lifeline. That'll really set your tone for the day. Now, you know, I remember, you don't mind if I tell this story, I hope. Hal was president of our state organization down in North Carolina. And we were driving home from conference. And at that time, we did a survey every year, a different survey, just to find out how we can better meet the needs of North Carolina homeschoolers. And so on the way home, Hal's saying, I think we need to do a survey to find out what homeschool moms are stressing about. And so he said, you know, are they stressing about special needs? Are they stressing about homeschooling high school? Are they stressing about, you know, how they can get their children involved in extracurricular activities? Or what kind of philosophy of curriculum to choose? And I just looked at him like, what? And he said to me, what is your problem? And I said, Hal, we don't need a survey. It's the house. It's the house. I'm teaching my children. The house is a wreck. First of all, you're doing the most important thing. It's not the house that defiles our children or us. It's sin. And in discipling your children, you're choosing the better way. You know, as I think back to my family growing up, I think our house was probably a wreck a lot. I have some vague memories of it, but that's not the main thing I remember about my mom. The main thing I remember about being little with my mom is laying down on the kitchen counter and her washing my hair while she taught me Bible verses. I remember her praying with me and reading the Word of God with me. And that's what I want my children to remember. You know, the house, well, it's still got to be dealt with. We had a real struggle with this. And you can manage. I had a struggle with this because when Katie was sick because she had a heart condition that her heart could go into that dangerous rhythm at any time. And if it was in the dangerous rhythm, she could die without warning immediately. And so she had to be held all the time. We couldn't put her down. Well, it was during that time that we wrote our book, Raising Real Men. What? That doesn't make sense to you, does it? But I have a large family, and there are many hands to hold her. And so she just went from brother to brother to brother to sister to dad to brother to mom to brother to sister. She was held constantly her first 6 or 8 months until she got old enough, you know, to let us know when something was wrong. And yet during that time, we wrote a book. And so it can be done. You know, we can make it, but there's some things that we can do to help. The answer is all hands on deck. You've got to get over the it's got to be perfect thing with the house. It's not going to be perfect. And let me tell you something. It is a lot better for everyone to wear pink underwear than for there to be no clean underwear at all. You know, I have a friend who told me, she said, I can't have my children do laundry. I said, why not? She said, well, they can't get my system. You know, I have these 15 baskets. She was a little OCD. And she said, they can't get my system. I said, well, you know, let me ask you something. If God gave you a laundress, what would you be spending that time doing? Oh, I'd be reading my baby more. Honey, don't you think reading to your baby is a lot more important than 15 baskets? So what if you ruin a shirt here or there? Go buy a new one. Because you can't buy the time with your children. But, so get over it, it's got to be perfect. Don't expect them to do a good job. Inspect the job they do. And then teach them how to do it. Okay? Because they will not do what you expect them to. But remember that many hands make light work. When you get everyone involved in working on the house, it's amazing how quickly you can clean things up. Get everybody in the room where you're supervising. If you don't work with them, you might as well hang it up. You say, go clean your room. You'll go check them in 4 hours, and they will be very proud that they organized a rubber band collection. And the house is, and it's, the room is that deep, you know? Instead, you go in the room and you say, okay, today we're all going to work on the bunk room. Come in here with me. Okay, you pick up 10 books. You pick up 10 toys. You pick up 10 pieces of trash. I'm going to pick up 10 items of clothing. And you all work together. You make it a game and you work together, and you'll get it done remarkably quickly. Another way to deal with it is regular chore times. You know, people have these chore chart systems and stuff, and I can't handle it with a big family. It's too complicated. What I figured out, though, is it's easy to fly under radar when you got a lot of children, right? It's easy for one to sneak away and do his own thing. So we have regular chore time. Pre-breakfast chores, pre-lunch chores, after-lunch chores, pre-dinner chores, and after-dinner chores. 5 times a day, we're all supposed to be working. Well, if we're all supposed to be working, it's real obvious to me if no one's working. Versus they just have jobs to do, they could have finished their job. The only thing I have to do is go check, which I don't have time to do with 8 children. You know, and so instead, have a time that you're all supposed to be working, okay? Now, and what we do in our house is we rotate through a series of chores. We have several major things that just really take constant attention. The meals, the laundry, the dishwasher, and the room where we do school, and the other main living area of the house. And so our older children rotate. It used to be on a weekly basis. They begged me to go to a daily basis. Now it's a daily basis. And really, it's good because if somebody shirks, you don't get too far behind. And we have daily rotation. I'm the chef of the day. You know, the chef of the day works. And the chef of the day, that brings me up something. Some of you are thinking, well, I don't know about having my boys do inside work. Well, I had a friend who had girls who said, I would never make a son cook and clean. That's girl stuff. I said, who told you that? No, I didn't. You know what I did? I felt guilty. I worried about it. Am I doing the wrong thing? Am I feminizing my boys? So I went to Hal. Hal, what do you think about this? He said, are you crazy? He said, look, why do you think they call sailors in the Navy swabbies? Because they're constantly swabbing the deck. They're constantly mopping. Why do you think there's always a cookie on the cowboy crew? He's the guy that cooks for the crew, okay? It's not the job, it's the marketing of it. So if you say to your little boys, if you say, oh, honey, would you please go make my kitchen beautiful for me? He's gonna resist so hard. But if you say, if you hand him your Tabasco apron, and you say, son, the kitchen is worrying me to death. It's got me down today. I need rescuing. I need you to get in there and conquer that kitchen. It's more than I can handle. It's so dirty, it just gives me the creeps. Would you please help me? He is in there. He's going to do that job. He's going to rescue the beautiful maiden from her kitchen. Okay? So you got to market it in a manly way. All right? None of this sissified stuff. Don't use lilac cleaners. Use Pine Sol. Okay? Use a manly cleaner, all right? Now, I'm going to confess to you. I was at a state leaders meeting where a bunch of leaders from all over the country and all over the state, all over the countries, all over the world meet together, homeschool leaders, and we share ideas and visit. And Vicki Ferris spoke to our group of ladies at the ladies' tea. And she stood up and she said, I have to confess to you that I love China. I have several different kinds of China. And I thought, oh, I do too. I have Christmas China, I have daily China, I have fiesta ware. I love China. She said, and most days the Ferris family eats on paper plates. Well, I want you to know that a group of state leaders stood up and gave her a standing ovation. Because we felt freed if beautiful, famous Vicki Ferris could feed her family on paper plates. Why, so could we. We could do it too. And many of you are in the time of life of survival. You have a lot of little ones. You're overwhelmed. Folks, listen, paper is a renewable resource. Your time is not. And so get some paper plates and paper cups and take care of your little ones. Do what it takes to survive. Simplify your home. Do some bulk cooking and cook ahead so that you can deal with those rough days. You know, because it's important to let things go when you need to. This is a hard lesson. You know, this may be not be the season for you to have a giant garden and eat organically out of your own land. This may not be the season for you to make the perfect scrapbook, but those days will come again. You know, I have a friend whose husband was one of those, hope none of you guys here are that kind, that wanted the house perfect and food on the table hot when he walked in the door. And she was stressed out. Because she was homeschooling and she had like 4 or 5 little ones. And she was so overwhelmed. Because then he decided, you know, we're homeschooling. We need to give our children some healthy diet. Let's get some chickens. And we'll grow our own organic chickens. And we'll have a garden. And we'll feed our children really healthy. And let me tell you a little secret. It's not what goes into the body that defiles the body. And she quit homeschooling. They put their children in a very inferior Christian school because she couldn't keep it all up. And you are probably not going to be able to keep it all up. You know, my children have a grain mill business. This is probably not the time of life for you to grind your own grain. Okay? Because what's more important is building the discipleship in their hearts and getting through these days. But those days will come again. Because see, one day you're going to have older children. And you're going to be able to sit there and scrapbook with your daughter, because she's going to be a teen and she's going to hold the baby while you show her what to do and then hand you the baby so that she can try it. You're going to have a son who says, Mama, can we have a garden? I'd like to plant a garden. Sure, son, but I can't do it. I'll take care of it. Me and my brothers will do it. And they'll bring the produce in for you. Those days will come again. But don't despair now because you can't do everything. It's important to let the less important things, and listen, everything having to do with the physical body is the less important thing compared to the spiritual, to let the less important things go and pick them up again later. You know, that's how we were able to write a book with a newborn baby who was sick, because we had lots of hands and lots of help. Now, let's talk about some of the special performers in this show, okay? Here's one of our little ones. That is my chair, by the way. See my bookcase next to the recliner? And on the other side, the children's table, so the little ones could get away from me, right? So I could supervise them while they're doing their schoolwork. And that's an important part of meeting a baby's needs. Babies really have very simple needs. I don't know if you've realized this, but babies really don't care whether you have a nursery color scheme. Okay, in fact, babies don't care about anything except, do I have a clean diaper on? Is my stomach full of mommy's milk? Can I nurse when I want to? And am I warm? Preferably in someone's arms. They want arms, milk, and dry. Okay? Wet on the top, dry on the bottom. Remember that. Okay? And they have, those needs are really incredibly simple to meet. You know, you can do home, all kinds of homeschool tasks while you mother your little ones. You know, nursing for comfort, a baby, that, you know, there's no need to say, wait till we're done. Just pick the baby up and nurse the baby while you're doing your schoolwork. And having the right stuff really helps. Okay, a good chair, a chair that you can get a couple of children into your lap is what you need, okay? The right arrangement, like you see my school books where I can reach them, the little table where I can supervise the younger ones. And make sure you have baby supplies and toys in your schoolroom. Now, make sure they're quiet toys. Do you know what to do if somebody gives you a noisy toy? What you say, throw it in the trash. I like that. Some of us aren't that courageous, though. So what you do is you say, Mama, because always grandparents, thank you so much. That is a great toy, and I know they will love playing with it at your house. That'll stop it. Okay. So you got to get some sleep. Everyone I know, with the exception of one or two, that has more than three children sleeps with their babies. Somehow, I don't think that Father Jacob had a separate tent for the babies. Okay? This is a new way of mothering, to have the baby separated from their mother. Babies are a lot happier with their mothers, and mothers get a lot more sleep. Now, you're thinking, what? Oh, is this safe? Is this safe? If you don't believe it's safe, go Google Dr. James McKenna, the Mother-Baby Behavioral Sleep Laboratory. If you are nursing your baby, it is very safe for your baby to sleep with you. It's, the research shows that their sleep cycle tunes up with yours, that when they're coming out of sleep, you're coming out of sleep. When you're going back in, they're going back in. Now, this is not scripture, so if you sleep better with your baby in a crib, put your baby in a crib. But for most of us, we're going to sleep baby better if the baby's right there, where if the baby rouses up, I'm rousing up at the same time, and I can latch the baby on and go back to sleep, which is very important when you have a lot of little children, okay? Also, you can use your other children as little helpers. I suggest you have them work on the things and you work on the people, because the people need you, okay? But, so you want to treat helping with the baby as a privilege that doesn't happen as often. Now, having the privilege of holding the baby, they will quickly find out, if I'm holding a sleeping baby, I can stay there forever. And I get to read and goof off, because nobody in their right mind disturbs a sleeping baby in a large family. So take advantage of this. This is good. Let them sleep on your chest. This is a picture of one of ours with a little newborn asleep on the chest. They were both happy as a clam, right? And remember that your little ones need you. They need you. Use the bigger children to do stuff, okay? And what about the toddlers and the preschoolers? Okay, they're challenging, okay? I recommend that you keep them all together, okay? Keep all together now. Keep them in the schoolroom with you, because that way they're not getting into trouble. They're not in the toilet, okay? And so put lots of toddler toys in the room. Have a toddler-friendly schoolroom. Have lots of, put some baby gates up and toddler locks, hooks on doors to keep everybody safe. But, you know, as you get more children and older children, your need for that is going to lessen, because there's going to be more people everywhere to rat on somebody who's doing something they shouldn't do. You know, to keep them out of trouble. And so it works. And so, you know, many eyes are the most effective safety tool. Keep them under your eyes or under their older children's eyes. Now, but yeah, they're always saying, but I want to do school. They want to be included. Homeschooling is something the family does. And I remember one of ours coming up, and he was two. And we're not so hot at toilet training with boys. And he came up, and he said, and we were having that first day of school, and this is what you're going to study, and these are your books, and passing out all the new books, and old books passed down. And he said, I got to the end, and he said, but what about me? What am I going to study? And I had a spot of brilliancy. I said, you could learn to go to the potty. That's a big skill to learn, and I'll give you a star on the chart every time you do. When you get 5 stars, I'll give you a treat, too, every time you go. When you get 5 stars, I'll buy you a Matchbox car. They're cheaper than diapers. You know, 5 diapers, about 25 cents. That's $1.25. You get a Matchbox car for $1. You just made a deal. Okay? And so he said, oh, great! And he potty trained himself in 2 weeks versus his older brother, which I'm not going to tell you how long it was because I'm really embarrassed. Okay, but anyway, look for signs of readiness that they're ready to learn, okay? Teach them the basic sounds of the letters. Teach them to manipulate numbers, you know, in life, okay, in the normal activities of life. And so, okay, everybody's going to get a cookie. We've got our family, we've got 2 friends visiting. How many cookies will we need? Okay, and as they're able to do those things, as they're able to learn those basic things, then you start slow and with low stress in a fun way. We're going to be talking about that tomorrow if you have all young ones in the homeschooled from the beginning talk tomorrow morning. Every once in a while you have a child who wants to do school but isn't really ready. And so you may need to have some coloring books and crayons and things that they can do school, okay, even though they're not really ready to do school. And keep lots of art supplies and paper and preschool workbooks and things just freely available, no stress. You do not need a preschool curriculum. Hello? Okay? What children learn best in preschools, the most expensive preschools, Montessori preschools, they teach them to follow mama around and work. Okay? I'll talk about that tomorrow. You don't believe me. Okay? You know, it's really tempting when you have a large family. When someone says, let's go to the fire station, we're having a fire station field trip, and say, oh, we've been to the fire station. And then you realize that 4 of your children had not been born the last time you went to the fire station. And so it's kind of intimidating. But you have to realize you need to take the little ones too. You need to redo all those fun things. You need to go to park days. You need to go on the little kids' field trips. And there's a big advantage to this, because you are going to be a tremendous blessing to the new mothers that are there. Because you've been there where they are, and you're past it, and you can provide wisdom and perspective. That'll be your Titus 2 ministry to the younger moms around you. And so grasp it as a ministry and enjoy it as something that God's gifted you to do to help and encourage those younger moms. And take naps. You know, we have nap time for everybody. And especially when children are younger, not so much because our older ones know, if mama's taking a nap, you don't mess with me unless you are bleeding, and it better be a lot of blood or a bone is sticking out or something, okay? Nap time is sacred for mama. I mean, I don't even like somebody opening the door, you know, even though I have teens. And so what I've done with our little ones is I take the little ones to my bed and I read them some stories. And I say, okay, we're going to take a nap now, and I throw my arms across them in a great big hug, and I go to sleep. They can't move, and they eventually go to sleep too. Now, I set my internal clock to say, okay, I'm going to wake up in 20 minutes. Did you know you can do that, and it's almost always accurate if you train yourself? It's really cool. And so I wake up in 20 minutes, I'll feel like a new person. I slide out of the bed, and I can go work on the house or do what I need to do, work with the older children. They stay in bed a couple hours because they fell asleep in mom's bed together, and everybody's more comfortable, okay? So, on the other end of the spectrum, we have the high schoolers, and they create their own gifts and challenges. It is challenging combining babies and toddlers and teens with schoolwork because it's hard to pay attention. Our house is a ruckus. I mean, it sounds like we had friend of mine who has four daughters came and watched my children one day while I made an emergency trip to the Chinese embassy for a visa, okay? And I got home and she said, I am dog tired. She said, how do you do it? I said, were the children bad? And she said, no, they weren't bad. They were just so loud and busy. You know, it's different. And so your teens, you're probably going to have to give them a special place to do school, maybe the dining room table in a different room than the little ones. You're not going to be able to school at the dining room table with little ones, okay? You need to be in a place, a couch or a chair where you can gather people around you, okay? But let your teens school at the dining room table. Give them some headphones. You know, let them be on their own. And what happens if you find that they're in there watching Netflix instead of doing their schoolwork? Well, then they go back to mom. And they come back in the room with me. And they have to do their pre-calculus and chemistry with people chanting Latin chants and reading aloud silly stories from the early readers. And little kids on the floor going zroom, zroom, zroom. And pretty soon, they're dying to be responsible. You know, mom, I will do it. I promise. I'll get my schoolwork done so fast. Just please let me go back in the dining room. Okay? And so you bring them in. If they don't handle their responsibility well, you bring them back under authority. Your teens are also your secret weapon. They are such a very big blessing. It is incredible having older teens, to see them in the lives of their younger siblings, you know, admonishing them to do right, you know, to be an example of them, to helping around the house. You know, I don't know if any of you have been to my booth, but Helen and I have been speaking so much, we've barely been at the booth. But our children are running the booth. You know, our teens, we've got one 20, 22, but the teens have been running the booth. And, you know, the children have been passing out response cards. My 12-year-old and 15-year-old have been doing that. You know, they will bless you. They'll come to your rescue. And it really does get easier. It gets tons easier than those days when you got all little ones. It's way easier having an eighth than it is having a fourth. You know, you're going to have a lot more help, a lot more hands in the house, a lot more love. I used to worry if we had a large family that nobody would get enough attention. What a pile of steaming horse poop. Because you know what? When there was me and Hal, we loved each other, and there was one other person who loved me. And we had John. And John Calvin, oh, we both loved him so much, and he loved us. And there were two people loving me. Now we have eight children. There are nine people loving me. Nine people loving each of them. They get way more love and attention than children in a small family. One of the challenging things about teens is those high school years and the middle school years when they're going through the hormonal roller coasters, and they seem to go from teen to toddler to adult to toddler to teen. It's crazy. Some of you I see are there. You got to prepare them for that battle. You've got to explain to them what's happening and explain to them that their hormones, one day their body's producing too much and they feel belligerent. The next day it's producing too little and they feel like weeping. Nobody loves me. And yeah, Satan is trying really hard to tempt them to create a break between you and them. And instead, you've got to be the adult. You've got to keep your temper. You've got to work through it with them and keep calm with them. And finally, you're going to get to senior year with your children. Then you're going to have a succession of senior years. It's all consuming. I told you about I'm going to college with you, John. It's really all-consuming to get them ready to leave, help them point the way, figure out how to manage the transition. But let me tell you something. The Word of God says there's no greater joy than to see your children walk in the truth. It is so true. It is so true. To see those children become adults is just absolutely incredible. You know, it's such a joy to see a straight and true arrow fly off that bow, to see them on their own when they're not under your control anymore, walking with Christ. And that's the goal, isn't it? To raise our little boys and girls to become men and women of God, capable of standing on their own and glorifying Him in their lives. We've gotten to that point with our oldest couple. And, you know, it makes all the science experiment failure and colicky babies and wrecked houses and rotten school days fade away in amazement at what God has wrought from our pitiful efforts and failures. And we have failed a lot. But God has wrought something beautiful out of it. And so look to Him to be your supply. Look to Him to be your strength and your grace and help you make it through this time. Listen, what you are doing is important. You are raising an army to serve the Lord, and you're preparing them for the battle. And yeah, you're going to face opposition. It's a spiritual battle. Have you figured that out yet? It's not about spelling and math, you know? It's about you're discipling your children, and you're facing opposition, and it's a spiritual battle. But God is with you. Your general is with you. And He's giving you direction. He's bringing you supplies. And He's giving you ammunition. And He's standing in front of you and He's taking bullets for you. You know, he is there for you. And He's going to meet your needs. And He's going to draw your children in close to Himself and draw you close to Himself and conform you to the image of Christ. When you feel like pulling your hair out, you know what? You're being conformed to the image of Christ. You're learning patience. You're learning giving. You're learning to put someone else's needs ahead of your own. We're being discipled too, aren't we? But it's all worth it. It's all worth it as you see them become adults. They passed out some response cards, and I urge you to turn them in because our friends at J.M. Crimps have donated a really awesome backpack that we're going to be giving away tomorrow afternoon. And I would love to give one of you that backpack. So fill out those response cards. And there should be some people at the door to hand them out, to hand them back to. How would you help me, honey? Because I don't think we have enough to cover the doors. But I think the hostess will be there, and I'm hoping one of our sons will be back in a minute. And I want to tell you, we are publishers as well as authors and speakers. And we just published a brand new book called Children in Church. And many of you have felt like I have, that you want your children to be in the worship service with you. That too often the children's programs and the youth programs draw our children's hearts away from us and away from the Word of God, convince them that church is about them and about entertaining them, and it's not about God. And we read this book. It's by Kurt and Sandra Lovelace. They are so cool. They have a ministry to international homeschoolers. And so they live in Prague, and they hold an annual conference in Bosnia. And they minister to missionaries and expats and nationals who are homeschooling all over the country. They've had a conference in Thailand. And they were actually Kurt was led to the Lord by Francis Schaeffer. And they were discipled by him, and they served on staff at Libre. So they've been in ministry for 30 years. They homeschooled their kids from the beginning, and their kids are in their 30s. But they wrote this book, and when Hal and I read it, we said, you know what, we have to publish it. Because it's not just... It is why you ought to be worshiping with your children, but it doesn't stop there. It's how do you survive it and enjoy it. And it doesn't stop there. It's how do you teach your children to engage in the service, to worship the Lord, to understand the sermon. And I tried an idea from their book with my 7-year-old daughter a few weeks ago, and I was amazed because at the end, the sermon was about the qualifications of an elder. And at the end, she had 12 little pictures, and she had every point down. She explained those points to me. She had a dad with the children, surrounding children, and she said, he's got to rule his own family well. I mean, she just had every point. It was awesome. So anyway, it's in pre-publication. We just printed review copies to give to reviewers, but I couldn't resist. I asked them to print a few extra boxes, and I bought a couple of boxes with us. So we have a couple of boxes down there at the booth. When they are gone, you're going to have to pre-order it for delivery probably close to Christmas. So anyway, if you'd like to grab that while it's available, please do. You can go to the website we've set up for it too at childreninchurch.com or facebook.com/childreninchurch. Also, we do a beginner's boot camp. We do what we call boot camps. They're online webinars where you meet with us online like every Monday night for 4 weeks or 5 weeks, okay? We're doing one in July called Beginner's Boot Camp. And I'd like to invite you to come join us. You can go there. We have several boot camps as well, boot camp 9 to 12 for 9 to 12-year-olds, surviving college boot camp. It's at raisingrealmen.com/bootcamps. There's a $15 discount this weekend out there. So you can go check it out. We'd love to have you join us. It's a kind of way to get some ongoing teaching with enough separation that you have time to think about it between times instead of this fire hose of information you've gotten this weekend, right? So thank you very much for having us. I appreciate it. Do we have any time for questions? We got 2-3 minutes?
5 minutes.
5 minutes? Okay, we can take a few questions. Anybody got any questions? In the back in pink? Yes. Yes, you can. She asked, can we get a copy of the poem that my son wrote about manhood? In fact, one of his brothers just talked me into it. He said, Mama, people ask that all the time. Would you order some posters with that on it? Okay, we're going to do it. Keep an eye on RaisingRealMen.com. Like our Facebook page. We expect to do that just in the next few weeks. So they've talked me into it. So, I don't think so. Any other questions? Yes. We have had our children to church with us for 22 years. They have never been in the nursery. Yeah, it's tough. It's hard. But they have some great ideas for coping. Yeah. I think you'll be interested. Yes. Okay. She asked for specific curriculum ideas that work well with large families. It's easy to tell you what doesn't work well with large families. What doesn't work well with large families is the traditional Christian school curriculums. You know, like the big boys, you know, that are textbooks. You have 7 different textbooks for each child. That does not work well for a large family. Do not do this. Okay, you will go crazy. Okay. Instead, curricula that you can combine, literature-based curricula, things like Veritas Press, My Father's World, Greenleaf Guides, Tapestry of Grace. There's tons of great ones, but things that you can combine the children is what you want. Yes?
2 questions.
Yes.
My Father's World kind of does it, what you have to do like every day.
Yeah. She asked, what do you do? Some of the curricula require, like, tell you what to do each day. You are the teacher. Ignore it if it doesn't fit your family. Just don't do it. What you got to realize is in 11th grade, it's really critical they do every lesson. In the second grade, not so much, because they're going to get it repeated 45 million times by the time they get to 11th grade. And so don't panic if you can't get everything done in the second grade. If you miss a lesson here or there, if you do the let's hit a lick at a snake method, you know, let me tell you this concept and we'll get to the end next year. It's all right. Skip it, slice it, do it tomorrow, double up on tomorrow, skip it if it's something that they pretty much know. Feel free to modify it, because if it's a curriculum you don't feel comfortable modifying, don't use it. Okay, seriously, because you are going to have to modify if you're in a large family. Things like Apologia Science for the younger students, great. You can do all your younger kids together with it. You know, so if they don't get it, they're going to hear it again. Yeah, because you're going to go through it. Yeah.
And then with phonics, like, I have a 9-5-3 in 1-year-old.
Yeah.
So I'm teaching, my son's learning to read, but it's very difficult when you have distractions when you're teaching to read it. Would you recommend doing that at nap time and skipping your nap? Or would you?
Well, I tell you what, if phonics, she asked, what do you do about when you've got a bunch of children and he's really having a hard time with phonics? Or you're hard time teaching him? First of all, sometimes they're not ready.
Well, he's ready, but I mean with distractions.
Well, sometimes he's not ready for that amount of focused time.
Okay.
You might need to do shorter chunks. You might need to do a curriculum that doesn't require writing. You know, do shorter chunks, things that don't require. And if it's, okay, I thought one of my sons was ready because some days he knew it, and other days he didn't. And I thought he was distracted or old soldiering. He had severe dyslexia. That's very common in dyslexics, that they know it one day, they don't know it the next, because dyslexics can see two-dimensional objects in like they were three-dimensional, and they can turn them around. And B looks like D, looks like P, looks like Q if you turn it around. Yeah, and they're going to have reversals when they're younger.
How did you get that dyslexia diagnosed?
Oh, well, how did I get the dyslexia diagnosed? After trying every phonics program on the planet, and thinking it was me, and crying and weeping, and I was really foolish. I should, you know, you don't want to go to a professional until they're at least third grade, But don't push them. If you have a child who's struggling to learn to read, honey, there's a lot of time. You know, read, if he's less than third grade. Yeah. Yeah, you know, it's fine to do things in the evenings, to do them less times, and we're out of time, folks. But if you want to talk to me personally, I'll be right here. Okay, for a few more minutes, and then I'm heading to the booth. Okay, thank you.